Hi, I'm Mal Majoros. I am an 8-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. So, got an email. As I love to check my email and Facebook and everything, from 2-time melanoma survivor David Stanley, he wrote a book about his cancer. It started with a freckle, which is such a great title because a lot of people don't think that skin cancer is that dangerous. I've heard a lot of people say, oh, it's only skin cancer, which is like, dude, your skin is all over you. So I don't know why people think that. David's here with me today. How are you?
I'm well, Mel. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yes, yes. And I have heard that from people where they say, oh, it's only skin cancer. It's like, it's still cancer.
Right. It's still cancer. Well, and part of the issue is that we have confused essentially harmless kinds of skin cancers, basal cells, which mm-hmm. everybody's going to get if you live long enough. Heck, if you're a golfer, you probably, and you're 45 years old and you're white, you probably have already had one. And squamous cell, which is a little more dangerous. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I had melanoma. And melanoma kills one person every hour, every day in this country alone.
Whoa.
Melanoma is an entirely different sort of thing than just skin cancer, air quotes around just skin cancer.
Just skin cancer. Well, let's jump right in since we talked a little bit via email, and it's nighttime here in Michigan. We're both actually in Michigan, which is kind of surprising. Usually I'm calling people from all over the country and stuff. So let's jump right in. When did you find out about we're talking a little bit before on the show, but when did you find out about your melanoma?
Well, the first time was in the fall of 2006. I was a high school teacher then and a high school soccer coach. And my wife, it was in the fall. We were in practice, you know, in the midst of practice, I should say. And I just come home from practice, and my wife kind of leaned over at dinner after I got home from practice. And I think, oh, good. She's happy to see me, kiss on the cheek, whatever. And she's a nurse. And she looks at me, and she goes, that doesn't look right. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She says, you have a thing on the side of your face. And it was like, her tone was markedly different. And I've seen her be a professional nurse mm-hmm. on many occasions. And that was her nurse tone.
Oh.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she said, this thing right in front of your tragus. By the way, the tragus is that little nubby thing of tissue in front of your ear.
Oh, okay.
What do you mean? She says, well, it's kind of smooth on one side, and it's got two or three little eroded areas on the other. I said, well, you know, that's probably not good. She goes, and it's gray and it's brown. I said, that's bad. She said, yeah, you need to get that looked at. And so off.
Yeah, that's not something you want to hear. Your wife who's in her, oh, yeah, I don't like the way that looks. Usually if somebody says that to you, they're kidding. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, but I knew she had her professional nurse's hat on, and even though I did not know all that much about skin cancer at that time, I think as a science teacher, and my dad's a physician, and my brother-in-law is an orthopedic surgeon, so I've kind of been surrounded by this medical profession my whole life, I knew the ABCDs, as we thought of them at the time, about skin cancer. I thought, let's see, it's not nice and smooth, it's two different colors, I'm mm-hmm. going to the dermatologist. And
yes.
So they happened to be able to get me in like 2 days later, which is astonishing.
Oh, yeah.
Because I live in Genesee County. I live outside of Flint. And there are 5 dermatologists in this town in this community for 500,000 people.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that's not atypical. Dermatology is not a specialty that a lot of physicians go into. So getting in to see a dermatologist mm-hmm. can be problematic. I just was lucky that they had a cancellation at a time I could take. And he, you know, Dr. Barkey, Walt Barkey actually wrote the foreword for my book as well. And he did his exam, did a biopsy, and he said, well, you know, I'm reasonably certain it is something, Dave. And he said, we need to get the biopsy back before I can tell you exactly what it is. He said, but you have something there that we need to be concerned about. And a couple days later, the phone rang again, and he said, it's melanoma. It's melanoma in situ, which the easiest way to explain that is picture a chocolate chip that hasn't started to melt yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's melanoma in situ. It's, you know, it has not started to send out little runners under the skin. It has not yet. Melanoma also sends out essentially little escape pods all over the place. Hadn't started to do any of that. It was in sight. So he sent me over to a surgeon. He took it out. I missed, I don't know, maybe half a day's work. I skipped out of work at lunch, got a sub for half a day, and I was back for soccer practice that afternoon. So easy peasy, right? Melanoma in situ. I'm done. 1 year later,
So they didn't they just take it out and that was it. They
They were not, they didn't do a sentinel node biopsy because it wasn't really indicated based on all of the factors that they look at. And 1 year later, my wife said, that thing is back on the side of your face. I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, and it's bigger. And we took a picture of it and I looked at it and no kidding, it was like maybe twice as big around. It was probably the size of a pencil eraser or a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. And the same kind of thing, same presentation, a little eroded on one side, a couple different colors. And that was, by the time we all was said and done, that was stage 2 melanoma. And that set me up for, probably 15 hours worth of biopsies to establish clear margins and the final surgery. And it was really cancer that time. That was, the first time was kind of like la-di-da. The second mm-hmm. time I was scared.
Well, it's,
I was really scared.
It's kind of surprising. Well, I guess, I don't know a lot about melanoma. This is why I'm glad you're on today, because I would assume that since you have cancer, they would do more testing, biopsy, whatever.
Yeah, you would think, but because of the way melanoma spreads throughout your system, mm-hmm. it doesn't follow the normal rules in a lot of instances that the cancers that we're more familiar with does. It is a real bugger to treat. If you ever watch Star Trek, remember the Romulan cloaking devices?
Yes.
Melanoma can sort of do that. That's one of the reasons why there's no real effective chemotherapy. Cancerous melanocytes and non-cancerous melanocytes very much look the same to the body.
That's, melanocytes.
Yeah, those are, melanocytes are the cells in your body that give you pigment. Melanin is your pigment.
Okay.
And melanocyte, anything that ends in cyte, means cell. So it's a melanin cell. And any place you have melanin in your body, you can get melanoma. The inside of your nose, these aren't very common, of course.
Right.
Your eyes. Any place there is coloration in the skin, there's melanocytes, and you can develop melanoma. Again, I got to say this again and again. Those kinds of melanomas are really, really rare. About 95% of all melanoma is related to sun exposure.
Right.
And that we all know, but it is...
Nobody ever listens. We didn't really know. I remember in college, my friends would go out, lay in the sun, and they would put baby oil on to get tan. And I never did that. And I'm just like, that's basically cooking yourself, but okay.
Right. I remember those days, too.
Yes.
I was at Michigan State in the late 70s. I was the poster child for everything not to do in terms of good sun hygiene.
Well, you did go to Michigan State, so that's... Oh, what? Oh. Go blue. But go ahead.
I'm
going
to be sending you a t-shirt after that football game. But we did that too. We were out there.
Yes.
A little baby oil, or maybe it was coconut oil and a little baby oil, SPF, 2 maybe.
Oh,
everybody smelled like a pina colada. There was a professor at Michigan State when I was there. His name was, his last name was LaRoe. His nickname was Lash. He was a pretty dashing fellow. He was actually an economics advisor to President Kennedy back in the day. And Lash kind of enjoyed ogling the co-eds on campus.
Oh.
He staged a tanning contest.
Oh, my God.
And
what year was this?
This would be like 78, 79, right in there. I actually participated in the guys' side of it, which was pretty much guys walking across and a couple girls going, woot. The girls, it was much more like a...
wet t-shirt or something? Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. But that's the sort of thing we did. I raced bicycles for a living in the 80s when I got out of school. We were on the bike, 4 or 5 hours a day, mm-hmm. 6, 7 days a week. We almost never wore sunscreen.
Oh, of course not.
No. I mean, the tanner you were, that was a good sign that, that's how much time you were putting forth in the sport. That's, that was a show that, man, I'm in the saddle a lot. I'm out there riding all the time. So, by now I'm in my 50s. I just turned 58, and the backs of my hands at the right angle look kind of like waffles as a result of the sun damage.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, my face is still, melanoma aside, still has not shown a lot of aging changes, but my hands are just demolished. They look horrible. They look like, the hands of a 75, 80-year-old guy.
Well, that must have been like
sun damage from being on the handlebars.
When you were doing that, must have been like your what's the word, like your this is my chemo brain coming through, like when you're all tan and everything, everyone's like, yeah, he's been out riding. That's your sign of
Right. Badge of honor.
Badge of honor. Thank you. See?
Ooh. Yeah, absolutely it was. Yeah, if you weren't tan, you were doing something wrong. That must have meant you were slacking off or something. It was no surprise to me when Kath said the first time, you know, you got this thing wrong with your face. And it was no surprise when the doctor told me I had skin cancer. I was a little nervous about the melanoma thing the first time. But when it came back, I knew that was really bad because it came back in exactly the same spot, right on the suture line from the first surgery.
Oh.
Yeah, right in front
of
me.
You're like, hey, doc, can we get a discount here? Because it's right there. Dude.
Obviously, we missed something. Well,
yes.
And the work they did, the biopsies and whatever, showed that they didn't feel there was any relationship between had they left anything behind. That didn't seem to be the case. You know, and of course, this was 10 years ago. But when it came back, it was a lot more virulent. By the time I went to the University of Michigan, they have one of the world's finest melanoma clinics. They work with they've invented procedures, they've invented therapies, they are just, they're an amazing research facility and just right down to the ground, some of the nicest medical people I've ever been around. And as a bike racer and a soccer player and a ski racer, I've spent plenty of time in hospitals, and these guys were just stellar right from the ground up. And they saved my life. I mean, as Walt Barkey said, you know, if you would have waited a year after this lesion came back, mm-hmm. he said, it would have been an entirely different set of circumstances. And if you would have waited 2 years, it wouldn't have been a conversation because you would have been dead.
Wow.
Because when it came back, it was spreading rapidly. I went through, I think I started to say, 4 different biopsies before they established clean margins. They do this thing called a square procedure,
mm-hmm.
where they have this cool little, I mean, it sounds weird to talk about it in these terms, but it's a cool little scalpel. It's actually a double-bladed scalpel, and it's at an angle to each other, and it scribes out this, 1 millimeter by 2 millimeter piece of tissue, and they scribe it around the lesion, and then they examine the tissue, and if there's no cancerous cells there or precancerous cells, they say, okay, that's a clean margin.
So now, do they do that, and can they check the margins right there, or they have to send it out?
Well, they can't do it right away. When I had the procedure done, I would suspect that now, you know, 7-8 years later, they probably have the ability to check those margins maybe on the spot, but again, this was 2007 or so, and they didn't yet.
Right.
So I went back 3 times and had about 5 hours worth of biopsies, 3 or 4 separate biopsies.
Wow.
Until they managed to get clean margins. And Mel, I'm telling you, picture a 3x5 index card, hold it up in front of your ear, long ways out, and that's about how big the margins were by the time all was said and done.
Wow.
Big enough to put your fist through.
That's crazy.
Yeah. In fact, I saw some photographs of my face that they took during surgery, and it was really interesting in a, you know, now that I'm alive and healthy, all of that. They actually had to pull so much skin up that they pulled it up and around behind my ear. And now I kind of have to shave behind my ear because what was behind my ear used to be in front of my ear.
That's kind of like what they do to Joan Rivers and stuff. Used to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, but they didn't anchor it, so I didn't have the full permanent facelift. I just looked like young on one side of my face for 6 months, and then it went back to being, you know, this 50-year-old guy, you know, slightly saggy on the side of his face.
That's funny.
But they didn't want to do a graft if they didn't have to.
Right.
Because, you know, they don't want to open you up any more than they have to, because that's another possibility of infection. So they try not to do grafts if your skin is still flexible enough, and mine, who knew?
Who knew?
Flexible skin.
Well, you went from that, and now you're cancer-free. I never want to say cured, because, you know, if there was a cure for cancer, we wouldn't be sitting here talking. I wouldn't need to be the cancer warrior. When did you start writing your book? And tell me about your book.
Well, let me back up here just a little bit.
Okay.
Now, this all took place in 2006-07, right in there.
Yes.
My brother had oral squamous cell cancer just a couple years ago. He passed away in 2012, and I started writing about his cancer actually first, because he said, you know, this could be good, this could end badly, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but I really need to have a record of this, if not for me, for Amy and my boys and anybody else. So I started kind of as his Boswell, his journal keeper, so to speak. I started writing about his cancer a lot, and just I would make these connections between what he was going through, which, trust me, was far, far worse than what I went through. He had chemo. He had radiation. Mm-hmm. He had his jaw removed and his tongue, and his jaw was replaced with a machined titanium duplicate.
Wow.
Pretty impressive medicine. And
that hurts my teeth. Just thinking about
that. Yeah, mine too. And his. It hurt his teeth as well. And so I started writing a little bit about my cancer experiences as well, just because it was bringing back a lot of the fear. Some of the best stuff in my book, quite frankly, is me writing about the panic attacks I had in the OR waiting area, or the time I almost went after one of the doctors when I was having when I was waiting to have a biopsy. But I'll get back to that in a second. So I started writing about my stuff. And a friend of ours, after Michael passed away, said, you know, your blog posts are pretty good. She said, you know, and she's also a nurse. She said, you might want to think about putting those into a little bit better shape. She said, I don't know if you can sell them as a book. She said, but they'd certainly be pretty interesting, even if only all you could do is self-publish it. And so that was the genesis of me writing this book, was to get my story out there, get the melanoma story out there, because it's only in the last year or two that really people have started paying attention to melanoma. And the other thing is I'm working on another book project called Cancer Living, A Guide Through the Ordeal of Cancer.
Oh.
And I'm trying to sell that right now. And I know that if I am successful with my melanoma book, I can take that to agents and publishers, big ones, and say, all right, you know, I sold, you know, 14,000 copies of these essentially on my own. I said, now here I have the... So
now it's your job.
Part of a big picture to kind of become the brand awareness ambassador for melanoma, I guess.
Oh, that's a good brand.
Yeah,
I would say.
I think so. I have a message in that melanoma is one of the few cancers that we can, I should say, relatively easily avoid.
Right.
And we choose not to.
And like your wife saw your lesion or your mole or whatever it was and said something. And like your doctor said, a lot of people wait. And that's one thing I try to tell people. You know what? You can't wait. I don't, you know, we're not going to delve into the whole healthcare issue, but some people still don't have insurance. But you know what? Like you said, 2 years from now, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And what's worse, I would say, what's worse, your money or your life? You know, you might. Yeah. Does it suck to go into debt and maybe
medical bankruptcy?
Yeah, medical bankruptcy, or would you rather be dead? I mean, you know, and that's important. So, but you were a writer. We're talking before the show. You wrote about riding your bike and everything, and about bikes and things.
I've always been a writer, even. Mm-hmm. You know, that goes back. I sold my first published piece to a national bicycle magazine called Bicycle Guide in like 1986 about life on the road as a essentially what in motorcycle racing they call them privateers. You know, that they have maybe a little affiliation, a little sponsorship, but mostly they're out there racing their motorcycles because they love the sport and they want to do it and they want to see how good they can get. Well, there's a lot of that goes on in bike racing too. It's not all the Tour de France, you know.
Right.
A lot of us. Yeah.
Were you in the Tour de France?
Oh, no. I was never that kind of rider anyway.
Right.
I mean, I'm quick to say it, but I was a pretty decent track sprinter.
Mm-hmm.
I was good on the velodrome. I've never been a very good climber. Pretty fast in criteriums, but not quite fast enough, especially if it went uphill. I, you know, always pretty much more of the muscular kind of wrestler, gymnast kind of physique, rather than the typical endurance athlete kind of physique.
Yeah, well, that's exciting. I mean, bike rider, bike racer.
Yeah.
Did you win any? Were you on teams or did you win single?
I rode for a bunch of different teams. I rode for a team sponsored by Cannondale.
Oh.
I rode for a Fuji team. You know, that's a very big brand. I rode for one of their Midwest teams. I actually rode for Beck's Mustard and Brick Wheels over in Traverse City for a couple of years. That was fun. And if you're familiar with Steve Brown from Iceman Cometh, Steve sponsored a cycling team as well, and I rode for him for a couple of years.
Oh.
So, yeah, I mean, I pretty much lived out of my Toyota Tercel station wagon. Me and a couple of my teammates, and the value of the bikes on the roof far exceeded the value of the vehicle underneath, that's for sure.
Well, Toyota Tercel, yes, when you say that.
Yeah, exactly, right? It never broke down, not once in all those years.
Getting back to your book now, you started shopping it around.
Right.
You wrote it. Somebody, like a lot of people, say, you know, you have a great story, make it into a book. And you're like, yeah, let's do it.
I did. And mm-hmm. so I put it together. And, you know, as a English teacher, I'm a pretty fair editor, and I'm very hard on myself. So mm-hmm. that was good. You know, it gets the product, you know, to a clear point. And I'm also, you know, affiliated with a pretty good group of bloggers. And I gave a couple copies of the manuscript to those guys, because things that are clear in your head,
yes,
aren't always clear on paper. So I needed those guys, who were not all that familiar necessarily with my story, to read it to see if it hung together as something that would be interesting to read from start to finish. And a couple of the guys had some really good things to say about it, where it was essentially, we understand what you're trying to say, but it's not quite clear yet. And so we fixed it up and pitched it, probably 30, maybe 40 agents. And we kept hearing I kept hearing these odd things. Nobody's buying cancer books. And I'd look on the book chart, and I'm like, going, well, that's not true. Mm-hmm. Nobody's reading cancer books. And I thought, well, that's not true either. And finally, I got an agent who was honest, and he said, look, this is a great book. He said, it's a good read. He said, you're a terrific storyteller. The dialogue in there is just on the money. He said, but I'm going to be honest, you're not famous and nobody dies. I can't sell this.
Yeah. And then he's on it. He's true. It's very true.
Yeah. Yeah, he absolutely was. And I, you know, when at the end of the day, you know, that's the guy that I needed to hear. And I kind of wish I would have heard from him first. But in the end, I managed to get allied with a guy named Bill McGann, who runs mm-hmm. a small indie publishing press, McGann Publishing, he's in Oregon. And through my cycling writing, I pitched him some of my cycling pieces. And once he liked, I realized that he liked my style and what I had to say about cycling, I pitched him on the idea of publishing this manuscript as a book. And he read the first chapter, and he bought the manuscript before he finished reading the book.
Wow.
Yeah. I emailed him the manuscript in the afternoon, or the first chapter, excuse me, in the afternoon, and he emailed me that evening and said, I would be honored and privileged to bring this to press. Now send me the rest of the manuscript so I can finish reading the book.
Wow. And how long ago did it go from manuscript to your book in your hand?
Yeah, probably about, not as long as you might think, actually, 5 or 6 months, I suspect. The editor we worked with, she was really good. And we worked really well together. And because I had several other writer colleagues critique it ahead of time, she didn't have to do quite as much stuff to it.
That's good.
We went through many iterations of the cover, however. When you look at the cover of the book, you'll see it's a very freckly, late teen, early 20 girl's face with an eye. And the original iterations were something science-y, you know, whether it was, and because, of course, it's a book about melanoma. And I kept crowdsourcing all these different photos and ideas, and I kept saying, nah, doesn't work for me, doesn't work for me. And so my wife had this idea. She said, well, it's science is maybe not the story. The story is not the science. The story here is the human story.
Yes.
The cancer story. And I went, oh God, you're a genius. And she said, it's about freckles. Why don't you do something freckly? And then Carol and I, the editor, we went through, I don't know how many freckly faced photographs before we saw this one. And, you know, if you're at your computer right now and you Google melanoma, it started with a freckle on Amazon, you mm-hmm. will see that girl's face. And it is just, it's an awesome photograph.
Because it is an awesome
right
photograph.
There. It sucks you right in. And I found this out later. I don't know anything at all about graphics.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reflection in this girl's eye of a lamp.
Right.
And I never noticed it. And I showed this to a friend of mine who does graphics for a living. He said, it's that does it. And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, look at that eyeball. And I said, what am I looking at? He said, see that lamp reflected in her eye? I went, oh, yeah. He says, that's what makes this picture work. I said, what are you talking about? He said, if you don't have something like that in the photo, she looks dead. But because you're seeing what looks to be the real world, that just makes the whole thing jump right out at you. And that's like one of the first things they notice when they see that cover. They're like, oh my God, that girl's face is. And of course, I have several people who say, well, that's not your face. I'm like, yeah, you should be thankful.
I wanted to sell the book, so that's why it's not my face.
Exactly. So it took probably 5 or 6 months, I think, from start to finish, till it was actually, you know, book in hand and
yes,
available for sale.
And it came out in this year, April.
Right. It came out right at the last day of March, I think. And mm-hmm, we had the book signing. There's a great independent slash used bookstore here in Flint called Totem Books. Big shout out to them because they were hugely supportive. And I ran into the store's owner a week or two ago. It was the single best book signing slash launch that they've ever done in the history of their store.
Really?
I forget how many books they sold, but it was, we ordered them a couple cases and they sold all of them but two on that one day. And that includes people who had already bought the book on Amazon that brought it in for me to sign.
That's awesome.
So yeah, we had an incredible launch with those. Excuse me. We had an incredible launch with those folks. It was really strong.
And I think it is an important story because, like you said, a lot of people are thinking about melanoma and skin cancer now because they kind of, like you said, in the 70s when you had your tanning contests, and when I was in school in the late 80s, early 90s in college, when I was talking about my friend using the baby oil to tan, we didn't, skin cancer, or anyone who gets any kind of melanoma or cancer, that's never going to happen to me. That's always somebody else.
Right.
And, you know, SPF, I remember going to Florida, SPF 4, I never burn, and I looked like a lobster, and my parents were laughing at me, you know. Grade school, haha, I'm like, you know, that kind of...
I'll hit you with a couple statistics.
Yes.
5 serious sunburns mm-hmm. are enough to double your chances for melanoma.
Yowza.
In a lifetime. 5.
Whoa.
Not 5 in a year. That's 5. There are now more new cases of skin cancers, all 3 kinds, caused by tanning booths and mm-hmm. tanning salons. Yeah. Then there are new cases of lung cancer caused by smoking.
Whoa.
Skin cancer, melanoma mm-hmm. in particular, is the only major cancer on the rise since 1999. We have done a terrific job of awareness for so many other kinds of cancers, whether it's breast cancer or prostate cancer or, well, especially lung cancer. That's, you know, the crowning moment of cancer prevention.
Right.
But, melanoma is the only one of the major cancers, I think it's the top 6 major cancers, that is on the upswing mm-hmm. over the last 16 years, which is just should be devastating because it's so easily preventable. You go to the beach and you put on some SPF 30.
Exactly.
And you're still going to get a little tan, which isn't perfect, but we like to look tan. So, you know, let's be realistic about this. You're going to cut your odds
exactly.
way, way down. It's not that difficult.
And it isn't. And thank goodness, you know, they put restrictions now for younger people to use the tanning booths, which is good. I've never thought that was a good idea for myself. And, you know, now everyone, I think we're finally getting to the point where everyone's using the sunscreen. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I do some work with the New England Melanoma Foundation.
Oh, excellent.
They have gotten these big yellow tubs, like hand sanitizer, mm-hmm. you know, where you put your hand under the bottom and the hand
yes.
sanitizer comes out. They have these all over the beaches now, up and down some of the most popular beaches in the Massachusetts and the New England area.
That's awesome.
So you can get free sunscreen at the beach.
That's sweet.
That's pretty cool, right?
That is very cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And just like that, the half hour is over. Isn't that crazy? This was fast. This was very
cool.
Fast. Yeah. So where can people get a hold of you if they want to find more about your book?
They can message me on Facebook. Just mm-hmm. search for Melanoma Book, one word, and that will find me. On Twitter, I'm at dstan58. And
do you have a website?
I don't have a specific melanoma website.
Okay.
I do write for a blog called Dad's Roundtable, and a lot of my cancer-oriented things are on there because, you know, health is a big issue for a lot of dads because we want to be there for our kids.
Yes.
We have to learn to take better care of ourselves as we mature through fatherhood.
Yes.
But I don't have one that's specific for the
okay.
book.
Well,
but I do have that Facebook page for
it. We'll work on the website for your book because that'll get everyone... Well, everyone should be excited about it because people need to know about this. It started with a freckle. And when your wife says that doesn't look good next time, just say, okay, let's not do this again.
Right. We've done this enough.
We've done this enough.
Yep. So it's melanoma. It started with the freckle, and that's you can get it on Amazon.
And get it on Amazon. And I would say support your local bookseller. Go to your local bookseller and order it there. Cause
if they have it, yeah, they can order it for you. That's for sure. I'm all about the local and the indie bookstores. I think they're going to save reading in this country. I swear. I hope.
They will, for sure. And if you hang on, David, I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mel Majoris. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie. Check out my cool new Facebook verified Facebook page, The Cancer Warrior, on EmpowerRadio.com. Also, check out my blog, TheCancerWarrior.blogspot.com. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.